Welcome to the Star Zone. I'm Patty Spagnuolo. From resource fairs geared towards our students to arts and entertainment aimed to connect with our community, Lansing Community College hosts many events throughout the year, and the Star Zone gives you a rundown on what's on the way, where it's happening, and how you can get into the zone at LCC. Hello, this is Patty Spagnuolo, your host on the Star Zone. Today, my guests are Tony Glasgow, Associate Vice President of External Affairs, and Alassan Sacco, Coordinator for the Coalition for College and Career Readiness. Tony and Alassan, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Patty. I love that intro. The music is like awesome.
It's very upbeat, ready to go. Hey, first I want to thank you both for all the efforts that you do for students. And Tony, you in particular, I've seen you give tours of like 20 students, and then I've seen you give tours of with two students. And the thing that I admire the most is you have the same energy and care, whether it's two or 20 or 200. So I really appreciate that in you. It has always been clear that students are first and foremost to
Thank you. Thank you, Patty. So it's been a great journey working with you all these years.
Well, you've been a great mentor. So, you know, I've gotten a lot of knowledge from you. So okay, so having said all of that, we're going to dive into College Connect. It's running from July 7th through the 31st. So maybe you could talk a little bit about what it is and what does it do for students?
Thanks, Patty. I'll start out. Alassan is my partner in necessary and good trouble, not crime. This is our fourth year, and Patty, it's an opportunity for students who are GED holders, recent graduates, Michigan Reconnect eligible students, and we'll actually be going back to the graduation, high school graduation year 2023-2024, to address any gaps that they may have in reading, writing, and math. We also address college-going skills, success skills. We have everyone from the center, from student access to success coaches to financial aid, come in and talk to approximately, we're hoping, 40 students about how to be successful once they start in the fall. And that's our goal, that every single one of those students will start fall 2026.
So could a person be an LCC student and attend, be in this?
Patty, that's an excellent question. And Alassan and I were chatting with Trio yesterday. We are hoping to partner with Trio. Yay, we have our Trio grant.
Yay, that's awesome.
And they actually could, because if a student has not taken English 121, Math 120, and they have a bit of a gap, and they can't take the English or the math without the, I like to call it the helper course, the co-requisite. They just need a little bit more gap filling. They could be eligible for our four-week free, Alassan?
Yes, 4 weeks.
Is it free?
It is free.
Opportunity to get supports to include transportation, bus passes, tokens. We will feed our students every single day. They'll have breakfast at 8:30. We finish at noon. And we'll also provide other supports as needed, or at least connect them with our fabulous academic success coaches.
Awesome. Well, one of the questions that I thought of when I was reading through the pamphlet is there any component for career exploration? I know that you only have a limited amount of time with these students, so.
Alassan, do you want to take that one, or should I talk about Rebecca Soa?
Oh, you can go ahead.
Yeah. We actually have Career and Employment Services who will come in and do a presentation on one of our pre-class days. It's a full 4 weeks, but that first week, and Tuesdays through Friday.
Oh.
Mondays sometimes are a little bit of a challenge.
Okay.
Fridays, we connect with our students, make sure that they're ready to do whatever they need to do on the weekend. And they have that Monday to take care of their business. And then we start up on Tuesday. The first two or three days, we have all of those folks come in that are supports, including career and employment services. Our instructors, and I'm going to give a shout out to Colleen Thomas, who will be teaching math, and Joanne McFadden, who will be teaching the English language arts piece. They also incorporate things that deal with employment. That piece is just as important, and that's why we call it college and career readiness.
Perfect. The reason that's so near and dear to me is that, you know, we at the Transfer Center, we get so many students that they might be 30 or 40 credits in and they still haven't decided. Mm-hmm. And that can be problematic because they could be taking things that then once they do decide, those classes aren't going to apply to if they want to transfer somewhere or that type of thing. So, you know, the sooner we can get them thinking about what career, what job they actually want to do, the better off we are. So I heard you say 8:30 to noon, there will not be two sessions, just the one?
You remember, don't you?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah. Dawn Harton, another shout out, was the coordinator under our two sessions. We had 1.0, 2.0, and it was under a grant called Catch Up Grant. We're no longer functioning under the grant. The college has institutionalized College Connect under our Coalition for College and Career Readiness. And we are running one section. We started that with 3.0. And this year, because it's Alison's first time and we need to make decisions early on, we decided let's run one shift, as Dawn used to call it, instead of the morning and evening, 8:30 to noon. Our goal is 40 students, and this will give Alisson an opportunity to ease his way into being the coordinator all by himself for 5.0, because we're hoping to continue this, Patty. Wow. It is really important that we hit that 40 students is what we're looking for.
Okay. So you kind of talked about all of the resources and things. What can students expect, like when they walk in? Is there going to be some sort of getting to know their classmates? Are some people coming there with a posse? In other words, people that they already, you know, like five or six of them that can sit together. How does that look for those students?
Patty, you had indicated that we might talk about a story without using names.
Yes, sure, of course.
And I can tell you that the six students that we had last year, and we're shooting for 40, at least three of them knew each other. And that was interesting. We do icebreakers. You know, I've got a K-12 background. So every morning, whether they want to or not, we do get to know you activities because it's important that they engage with each other. We have a short time before classes actually start, after they're done with their breakfast, for us to do what I like to call check-ins. We'll also do icebreakers during our math time and our English time. Joanne McFadden and Colleen both. They love to engage with students. And a lot of times students don't feel comfortable. We may have 50-year-old students along with 17 and 18-year-old students. The synergy was amazing the first 2 years when we had multi-generational students in the same classroom. I can tell you that there are at least two students from last year sharing a story that have been involved with our Neurodivergent Friendly Campus initiative.
Great.
Participated in surveys and focus groups. One actually spoke, and you probably remember, at one of our summits as an example of a student who went through Reconnect.
Yes.
So, yes.
I do remember that.
They are being very successful.
Awesome. So the rest of the focus, after you get through that first week with the resources, sounds like we are concentrating on reading, writing, and math. What of those three, you know, what's the toughest thing to tackle? What causes the most anxiety?
Math.
Okay. That's what I was thinking. And we see that at the Transfer Center. The minute the student finds out they have to take Math 120, So how do you, I'm assuming there are things in place to sort of alleviate some of that stress.
Absolutely. And Colleen is amazing. Because Colleen is integrating things that help address anxiety, and she's also delivering math concepts in the context of real world, whether it's banking or purchasing insurance, things that students are interested in and they have to do. That really relieves a lot of anxiety. A lot of one-on-one where she's spending time with the students privately or within the same room. We take away the shame. We take away any negative recordings because we hear it all the time. I'm not good at math. My response is always, but you will be. I don't want to try and take away the reality, but words are powerful, and if we continue to allow people without affirming them, encouraging them, then they will believe what they say. I'm not good at math. There is so much we can do to build them up, and Colleen is really good at that.
I like that. I had talked to an elementary teacher a couple of years ago, and she said, it's not a matter of whether or not you're good or bad at math. It's how you understand it, how it's being taught to you.
Bingo.
It's because not everybody learns the same way, right?
Exactly.
So, yeah,
exactly.
It's just finding that thing, you know, that keys for some people. So in talking about math and of course, reading and writing, will there be placement tests also taken during this time?
Patty, have you been in our classrooms? That first week will also include assessments.
Okay.
We use the Accuplacer or GPA if they're recent graduates or if they can find their transcripts and meet the multiple measure for high school transcripts or ACT, SAT. That's our pretest. One of those multiple measures serve as our pretest. But they're being assessed through things like ALEX for math. So almost on a daily basis, Colleen can see and the student can see the progress they're making, and that helps her know what to teach. Joanne will also do assessments so that she is aware of terminology that they already know. Do they know how to set up a research paper, cite sources? And so that first full week will be focused on college-going skills, success skills, learning about LCC and the resources, but also determining what do I need to teach as the instructor and what do my students already know.
So would that mean that after the student, they take that preliminary test, if you
mm-hmm.
will, or kind of that baseline,
yep.
Do they get a chance to take it again at the end?
Patty, you know how we run.
Woo!
Yep, the Accuplacer will be the post-test as well.
Okay.
And in the work that we do, we appreciate the grant. The grant dollars allowed us to get started. We don't have the same parameters, and so if a student makes progress using Accuplacer as the post-test, we celebrate that as well. If the student is able to take English and math with a co-requisite, that's our goal.
Okay.
And if a student can take English 121 and Math 120 outright, oh my, that's the touchdown.
Wow.
And so it's not restricted to whether a student can take English and math with the co-rec. If they've made progress, then we then look at options for students who may not be ready to take English and math with the co-recs. I think it's a win-win for all of our students.
Absolutely. So can they, in effect, then register for classes right after this program?
Yes. And fortunately, and you know this, Patty, it doesn't always coincide when registration is open.
I know.
But we try to get them through advising. They have a map. And then our job afterwards is to follow up. Have you, now that registration is open, registered for classes? And here's the beauty. Before they finish up, they will have an academic success coach.
Oh,
and
great.
So where we finish our job of the in-person, we're seeing you 4 days a week for 4 weeks work, the academic success coaches will then shepherd and help and support and remind.
Oh, great. And so are they part of the program during the day, so to kind of get to know the students, or?
One presentation.
Okay.
So they're not part of the programming.
Okay.
However, we encourage the students to stop in. They can start connecting with the academic success coaches because the managers, you know, we have great managers, they will start to assign as soon as we provide them with a list of the students who have participated.
Great. Alison, is there anything you want to add, to kind of summarize or wrap this up?
Yes, College Connect is more than just a program. It is a head start on your college journey. In just 4 weeks, you will build skill you need and learn how college work. College Connect is a support system and start your semester feeling confident and prepared.
Great. Tony, any last parting words?
I don't, Patty. This is my last College Connect, and so I am going to go out with a bang, and I'm looking forward to where Alison and Sally Welch take it in the future years. It's a wonderful opportunity.
Wow. Okay. And that makes me a little bit sad when you said that, so be a little weepy here.
Yeah.
So, well, I want to thank my guests, Tony Glasgow and Alison Sacco. And to learn more and to register for College Connect, please visit lcc.edu/cc. Until next time, this is Patty Spagnolo, wishing you well, everyone. Thanks for joining us here on the Star Zone. For more information on this episode, visit lccconnect.org. You can also find a complete list of Lansing Community College events by visiting lcc.edu/calendar. Until next time, thanks for getting into the zone.
Keep connected with LCC Connect at lccconnect.org.
LCC.
Connect.
Voices.
Vibes.
Vision.
Engaged learning and academic success is a priority at Lansing Community College. To help students navigate their educational career, LCC has created a proactive approach to learning and providing students with several academic support services. To find out what's available, visit lcc.edu/services.
This message is for Shauna, my mom, who just finished her high school diploma. I wanted to say I'm so proud of you for finishing school. You taught me it's never too late to achieve your dreams. I hope to make you as proud as you have made me.
When you graduate, they graduate. Finish your high school diploma for you and for them. Visit finishyourdiploma.org to find free and supportive adult education centers near you. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
Lansing Community College's School of Business incorporates areas of study including marketing, insurance, management, and more. Transfer options and direct degree options are both available depending on the area of study. To find out more about LCC's business programs, visit lcc.edu.
LCC.
Connect.
Voices.
Vibes.
Vision.
Hello, friends, and welcome to Coach Cuts Corner. Streaming bright from Michigan's capital city, this podcast is dedicated to helping you better understand the who, the what, and the why of mental performance, personal growth, and Lansing Stars baseball. Coach Cuts Corner, brought to you by Eyewash.
In collaboration with Lansing Community College.
And now here's your host, Stephen Cutter.
Welcome to the show, and thanks for tuning in. Today, we're on a cold, blustery
morning here in the capital city in the WLNZ studios. I have Coach Radek in here with me again this morning. He's sort of turned into a co-host for the show. And it's just him and I in the studios this morning. And we're going to talk a little bit about the start of our season, because that's where we're at this point. And then we're also going to talk about heading to the American Baseball Coaches Association National Convention, which was something that we just traveled to this past weekend. And it is my 11th year of going to this convention and Coach Radek's first year. So there's some different perspectives. And Ryan asked some incredible questions on the drive down about what to expect and things like that. And we're just going to kind of cover it. So Ryan, what was your first impressions of the convention when we said, hey, do you want to go to this? What was the initial thoughts?
Well, I've heard of the ABCA convention before.
Because I think I talked about it last year to some degree and prior. So, yeah, that makes sense.
Yes. But I did not understand the sheer magnitude of how big the convention actually was and the association. I just kind of blew it off and thought I was going to be in a room full of maybe 50 guys talking about baseball.
And obviously, if you're not aware of the how big the convention is, it's grown to about 6,000 coaches that are in really big places that they host it. Last year was in Washington, D.C. It's been in Nashville. It's kind of been all over somewhat. They try to centralize it so for people to travel. But yeah, like that's probably the biggest thing about the convention is the sheer amount of people. And of course, I remember going to my first one 11 years ago and I showed up in a suit and I wasn't the only one in a suit that day, but there wasn't a ton of people in suits. Did you see any suits this year?
Maybe two.
Yeah, maybe two. Yeah. Yes. I think the numbers 11 years ago were higher. So I remember that. I remember during those 11 years, I've represented travel ball organizations, you know, a couple different high schools, summer collegiate teams, and of course LCC there, you know. And man, that's the other thing is you're walking around, you're just amassed in all these people. It's like you see every logo in the country, right?
Yes. Yeah, it was definitely overwhelming at the start. Got to see colleges that and schools that I've never even heard of. But it was really cool to see the turnout. It was very impressive, and it seemed like everybody there was looking to learn something.
Yeah, that was a big thing. We had Coach Alec and Coach Mo went with us, and I remember at some point Coach Alec turned to me and said, Tim Corbin's sitting right there, you know. Yeah. I'm like, yes. Yeah. So it was always a big piece of going to these kind of things just to try to grow, try to connect. And then the other really interesting thing, if you're a baseball fan, is the trade show that they have there. And you go into this basically what's the size of a football field every season, and it's everything under the sun. I mean, what are some of the things that you saw in the trade show?
I saw basically every baseball brand was there. Mm-hmm. I saw anything from batting cage supplies to the turf you use in the field to different types of fungos and all different types of apparel.
Yeah, gadgets galore. Yeah. You know, and sometimes if you have a little bit of longevity in the game, you'll go, and then the next year that gadget is no longer. And some of them you see actually grow, and some of them we've purchased and used, you know, through the seasons. So it's a baseball mecca for coaches, and you see coaches from all levels, whether it's professional baseball to, you know, little league coaches, and they have things geared for speakers. They have a youth side, and, you know, then they have the other side, and you're pretty much free to move around and listen to what you want to listen to and kind of pick and choose, and they lay out the schedule pretty beautifully. It's on an app and you can kind of go your own direction. So when I think back about what made me first go to the very first one, it was a curiosity. I wanted to know. There certainly wasn't 6,000 people there at that point. There was some really, I think, important people that helped grow the ABCA, but the American Baseball Coaches Association in general has done a phenomenal job of growing the brand and growing the unity and everything else. And so one of my biggest takeaways when I came home was thinking about just the pure mass of information that we were given over a four-day span, and then thinking about we live in a society that is filled with information, and for the most part, you can find anything or how to do anything, but finding it isn't really the biggest answer. It's the action behind it, and what do you do with the information you get? The other piece of the convention is you also hear some things that you maybe don't believe in or you don't agree with. And I think that's positive too. And I've always felt like with the speakers and the people that stand on stage, I felt two things. One, they're typically baseball coaches in one way, shape, or form. They're not professional speakers. And I've seen them get, you know, ridiculed by other people for how they speak or, you know, their speeches. And I always think they're coaches. They're not professional speakers. But then there's the other piece of it where it's just like, yeah, maybe there's something that's said that you don't agree with, but there's value in understanding what not to do too. Was there any other takeaways of the ABCA, of the experience beyond just the trade show and the sheer amount of people?
Well, like you said, the sheer magnitude of information was something that I was very happy with. I really liked taking notes. I like writing down my notes, to be honest. And I realized after the first day that was not going to be possible for the entire thing.
Why is that?
Because I probably wrote down more in 2 hours than I have ever in my life, it felt like. So I had to move to my computer and start typing. But I really liked how they didn't really just stack certain philosophies like back to back to back. It was more like, oh, here's something about hitting, and then here's something about vision training.
Right.
Here's something about mental performance. And they did a decent job structuring that each day to where you're not hearing the same thing over and over again throughout the day.
One of the things that I think I was proud of, and I wanted to bring it to light more or less to you, not necessarily to our listeners, but we were there this year for the first speaker, and that room was packed for Jay Johnson, you know, national championship baseball coach. And we were there for the last speaker too. And the room was not packed at that point. There was thousands of seats available. Did that strike you at all that morning, Sunday morning?
Yeah, I believe that people felt that getting that information on that last day or a flight leaving was a little more important than gaining more information. And in our program, we like to stick things through and get as much information as possible.
Yeah, consistency is a superpower, no doubt. And I just felt like that was a win for everybody that was sitting in the room. And I know the people that were standing up there speaking, talking about what they were asked to talk about, certainly appreciated the people that were still there, because I heard multiple. I think there was three speakers left that morning. And I think two out of the three commented on, appreciate you guys being out here. You know, so I want to shift gears a little bit, and I want to talk about, you know, super exciting thing. We are getting ready to start year five here, and we are just started. We just kicked off our spring season. Now, to backtrack a little bit, we had our fall season that started in August, and we were able to play scrimmages and practice, and we implemented a lot of different systems, and we found things that worked really well, and we found things that didn't work as well. And I think, you know, it was your first kind of rodeo on the, we'll call it the other side of the dugout, you know, the left side of the dugout, that front step of the dugout where the coaches are, you know, and you had to find some balance between friendships and mentoring, and you're still working on that kind of stuff. It's not a line, it's a gradual thing. And we go through the entire fall. It's an incredible fall. We have a fall that we break a lot of records, and we track a lot of things in our program beyond just batting average or ERA, you know. So we set all kinds of records and we set new standards and these systems of success and the different things that we're doing. And then we go, you know, we have our Christmas break and we come back and the start of the season and everybody's fired up. Everybody's excited. Everybody's talking about what they did during their separation season when they're away from us. And day one, we hit the ground running. I think we had a couple things on the practice plan we wanted to accomplish, and I think we got a couple things done that day. But I remember in my role, I try to help with the pitchers. I try to help with the hitters. I try to just work my way around, communicate, talk to people, try to be a problem solver. And all those things take a ton of time, but I love every minute of what I get to do. And I remember walking onto the hitting side where we have six cages going full bore and they're all doing different things. And I remember like kind of seeing you and you look like you were pretty busy. You want to talk about that at all?
Yes, of course. In the fall, I kind of was just getting used to coaching, getting used to the position and being, like you said, on the other side of the dugout. And thankfully, this spring season, since we've started, I've been able to take on some more responsibility and been able to provide more service to the program. And with that comes, you know, a little more stress, and like, you know, and stress is great. Stress helps you grow. So I was definitely busy.
What'd you have on your plate that day?
Yeah, so I had to take on the vision program, which we started day one here in the spring, just now, a couple days ago. And
we've been doing it for years, but yes. Ryan is taking the reins for handling the vision training program, and which is interesting reins in its own way because you took part of as a student athlete in the vision training program, which I think helps in a lot of ways because it gives you a different perspective, basically, to make things better.
Yes. Yeah, I definitely was able to see the stuff that worked well with it last year and then maybe some things that I was maybe like, oh, maybe that could be done a little better.
Why do you think vision training would be important for baseball players?
Well, there are studies that show that we tend to converge our eyes on a single point, kind of like our phones, computers, TVs, and strengthening our eyes will kind of combat that weakening that we get daily with using our...
Yeah, because they're basically coming in this direction because you're looking at it at the single points, which in the game of baseball or in sports or other things that you're doing, that's not always the most conducive thing for your eyeballs to be in those spots. So we work with Sports Vision Institute and Dr. Bailey, and she's been incredible with our program in the amount of feedback, the amount of support that she's given our program over the years. It's just been incredible. So you're handling the vision training portion of our practice, which is about, 15 minutes or so at this point. What else did you have on your plate that day?
And then we got right into a new speed program.
Oh, that's right. Yes.
Right after.
How's the speed program been going this year?
Absolutely incredible. I've not seen numbers like these.
Did you think it was going to be incredible when we started in August? Or I think we started in August, somewhere in there. So do you think it was going to be like that? Because I don't necessarily, I wasn't 100%. I took a lot of the speed training and agility certifications that I'd gotten when I was working in facilities and through CSAC and different things. And I'd taken those and just tried to modernize some of the things and, you know, use some of the tried and true stuff. But I knew it worked in the facility setting, which is different than a team aspect. But I definitely did not expect the stuff that we saw.
Without a doubt, yeah. I tended to think that usually you do a speed training when you're slow, but we have the privilege of having a lot of pretty fast guys on our team already.
probably the fastest team we've ever had here.
Without a doubt.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I wasn't sure how much they were going to grow from what they were because we were already really fast. I didn't really necessarily think we absolutely needed it. But like you told me and you stressed throughout the fall is that any advantage we can get, we are going to try and take it. So it was really amazing to see the numbers. Just through 4 weeks of the training, we saw a drastic decrease in times, and guys got a lot faster. The reaction time was better, and overall, just an amazing experience. So we're just going to keep it going and maintain it through the season to the best of our ability.
Yeah, and right now we're trying to basically do the high-low for the CNS systems, and so we're doing speed training on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, which also aligns with the days that we're in the weight room in the spring season, which also aligns with the days that we have the bat speed or whatever we might be doing with our hitters. And so those Mondays and Wednesdays and Fridays, there's longer durations in rotations for the pods. There's bullpens going on. There's a fair amount going on at our indoor practice, and we're thankful to be able to spend our time when it's really cold or it's raining or it's snowing at the Capital City Kingdom. And Joe McDonald, once again, has been incredible for us. He's been on our podcast here. But, you know, we have a lot of space there that we can use, and it's a lot better than being outside right now.
Oh, without a doubt.
So beyond being, like, super busy, how's the first few days? We've had leadership, identity, ITS. You know, we've had a lot of different things that we've got going on at this point. This week's a pretty busy week, I know, for me for sure. But what's it been like for you?
Well, coming off of the ABCA, I kind of tweaked my mentality and just making sure I set the tone for this season and staying as locked in as I can, making sure things run as smoothly as they can, and just making sure I can keep guys accountable. So with that comes, you know, like I've said, a little bit of stress, making sure everything runs smoothly when things don't necessarily run smoothly all the time. But haven't been this happy, or I haven't had this feeling of a sense of, like, purpose
yeah,
in a way, like, probably ever other than playing the game. So it's been pretty amazing.
It's the beauty of coaching.
Yes.
Yeah. It's an awesome job. We are about 30 days away or so before we start traveling. We open up on February 19th in Virginia. And we're in Virginia for, I think, a 4-game series. And then we come home, and we're home for about 3 or 4 days. And then we're back on the road to Georgia, and then we'll go from Georgia to Mississippi, and then we'll go from beautiful Biloxi to Florida, you know. And so we play a lot of our games to start the season on the road. Typically in a normal season, it's about our first 20 games of the season are on the road, mainly because we do not have a turf field, and mainly because we're in Michigan. And even if we had a turf field, I'm not sure that we could play a lot of times. But we play a lot of games on the road, and most of those games are, you know, further away. And then we get to come home after Florida, and we'll start our conference season, and away we'll go. And I know the question I get asked every year is pretty simple, but it's anything but simple to answer it. And, like, how's the team going to be this year? You know, you're going to go back to the World Series? You know, those are the two questions I get a lot. And I feel like I can't be super genuine when I'm answering those, because you never really know about teams. You can have the most talent in the world, and if they don't quite buy in, I know some of our listeners can relate to that too. You know, you can relate to that. You've been on teams before where you can have a lot of talent, but at the end of the day, talent does make a difference. No doubt about it. But if you look at what really moves the needle, it's more than hard work, and it's more than talent. And I think the jury's still out on this team. Could be special, could be a normal, really successful team here at LCC. We'll have to wait and see. And certainly you've done a lot of great stuff, and as I give you more things, you're taking it and running with it, and I've enjoyed watching you enjoy yourself at practice, and I've enjoyed a little bit on Monday when I saw you stressing out a little bit. I thought that's all part of growth, and that's all part of the journey. So thank you for coming aboard, and not only coming aboard, but also giving like all in max effort. So anything else on the start of the season that I haven't covered that our listeners need to hear about?
Yeah, no, I just really just want to reiterate that we really just need to have that mental toughness for this season and the ability to respond when things get tough. Something that's coming up soon is that spring trip, and we're going to be on the bus a lot. And so one of the main things that I'm going to make a point of is like, get used to the bus. Like, you guys are going to be on it for more than you're anywhere else. So
yeah, very true. And you can learn how to be efficient for your body, your mind on a bus. You just got to think ahead. And I think that's one of the bigger things that we talk about in our program is just, you know, where preparation meets opportunity. And sometimes those opportunities aren't legendary opportunities. They're not the biggest opportunity in the world. But if you can be prepared, if you can put some time in to prepare, you're going to have a much better shot at just really maximizing those opportunities that you're given. And the preparation meets opportunity. Until next time, thank you for listening. Go all in and go Stas.
Coach Cut's Corner is recorded live in the WLNZ studios with Dalian Lowry providing engineering and production assistance. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed today's podcast, please share it and follow us on all forms of social media. Our program has been built and maintained with the help of many great people. If you want to be part of our mission, you can donate using the link in the show notes below. You can learn more at CoachCutter.com and more about our team at LCCStars.com. See you next time.
Connecting you with Lansing Community College, this is LCC Connect.
LCC
Connect.
Voices.
Vibes.
Vision.
Lansing Community College Stars Athletics has a proud tradition of helping students build teamwork, communication, and leadership skills through sports including volleyball, cross country, basketball, softball, and more. Game schedules and team highlights are available at lccstars.com.
What grows in the forest? Our imagination and our family bonds. The forest is closer than you think. Find a forest near you at discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the United States Forest Service and the Ad Council.
The Adult Enrichment Program offers massage for beginners, giving participants the opportunity to learn how to ease tension for a partner, comfort a family member, or simply learn a new skill. This non-credit course teaches basic massage techniques and the healing power of touch. More information is available at lcc.edu/keeplearning.
LCC.
Connect.
Voices.
Vibes.
Vision.
Now, welcome to The Safety Plan, the show where I cover the latest cyber scam and how to avoid it on LCC Connect. I'm Paul Schwartz, and I'm happy that you are here. Let's do this. This morning, my daughter was singing Close to You by the Carpenters, and now that song is stuck in my head. I guarantee you've heard it. La, 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 la. Why do birds suddenly appear every time? Da, da, da. But I teach my daughter like cybersecurity kind of words to the song. So she was singing, why do scams suddenly appear every time I'm on the computer? Just like me, they long to be in my bank account. Anyway, yeah, obviously the college has allowed me budgetless artistic freedom on this show, and I will take advantage of that position. So welcome to the Safety Plan Show, and here's the format. First, I will describe a real-world cyber scam, like phishing or malware or identity theft and so on. Second, I will explain why it could happen to you. And third, how to protect yourself so it won't happen to you. So why should you listen to the Safety Plan episodes? First, I want to share my knowledge with you, so hopefully you can learn and be inspired by it. Second, a community knowledgeable in cyber scams will not fall for them in the future. And third, if people start practicing good cyber practices in their lives and at home, then they practice those same skills at work, which makes your business or company or local community college more secure. So win, win, win. Okay, so I'm Paul Schwartz, and I work at LCC as the Director of Information Security, and I coordinate security issues for the college, things like data breach coordination, account compromises, and so forth. I've worked in cybersecurity for 27 years, including 20 years in the Air Force, before I ended up as the Director of InfoSec at LCC. Yes, I'm one of the IT department nerds, and nerds are smart. S-M-R-T, smart. Okay, so for today's episode, I'm going to talk about gift card scams. A gift card is a form of payment that can be used to make purchases at retail stores, gas stations, restaurants, and other locations. You load money onto the card, which you or the gift card's recipient can then spend at accepted locations. A gift card is the equivalent of cash that can be used with a particular merchant. Gift cards are a form of prepaid debit card that's loaded with funds. Typically, there's a gift card number on the back and a PIN that is needed for online use. Now, retailers love gift cards. They hold onto the money that you don't spend for years. And when you do use up your gift cards, or when you do use your gift card, you tend to buy things more expensive than the gift card can cover, a term some companies internally call the upspend. So retailers try to make gift cards as easy to buy as they can. You will find all manner of gift cards in all sorts of things at drugstores and convenience stores and grocery chains and so forth. Gift cards are different than credit cards and bank accounts. They have no legal protections. When a victim shares the card number with a scammer, they've effectively authorized its use. Now, today I'm going to cover 9 common gift card scams. The first is being threatened by the Internal Revenue Service. This is one of the more common gift card scams. A criminal will call you and or send you a text or send you an email claiming to be the IRS. The scammer will say that you owe unpaid taxes and that the IRS will arrest you if you don't pay now with a gift card. So they ask you to go purchase the gift card, and sometimes they tell you to buy it at a specific place, and then you contact the criminal and read off the gift card numbers and the PIN. The scammer then uses this information to purchase items online with the gift cards that you bought. Now, first of all, the IRS will never call, text, or email you about unpaid taxes. The IRS will always send a letter with a phone number for you to call. Second, the IRS will never threaten to send you to jail for taxes you owe. And finally, the IRS will never request that you pay owed taxes with a gift card. There is no legitimate organization or business that wants you to pay them with a gift card. Okay. Scam number 2, gift card bots. Gift card scammers often turn to bots, which are software applications that perform automated tasks online, and they use these to drain the gift card balances of unsuspecting consumers. Scammers might use a bot, such as Gift Ghost Bot, to scour retailers' online gift card balance check systems. Now, these are the websites where you can go to with your gift card to see if you still have a remaining balance in your card. The bot attacks by testing millions. I've heard 4 million requests per hour, and those might even lead to an application denial of service. But those testing of millions of gift card numbers, what they're doing is they're trying to determine which ones have a balance. And if the balance is provided, the bot operator knows that the account number exists and that the card has been activated and it contains funds. So when the bot finds one, the criminal uses the gift card number to make purchases themselves or sell the gift cards on the dark web. Now, the dark web is a part of the internet that contains a hidden collective of internet sites only accessible by a specialized web browser, a Tor browser. It's used mainly for keeping internet activity anonymous and private, which can be helpful in both legal and illegal applications. Okay, then when you go to use your card after the bot has found it and drained it, you discover that the balance has been drained and your gift card is useless. You would probably make an irate call to the company that sold you the gift card and complaining that they gave you an empty gift card, but that's not exactly what happened. The bot has guessed your numbers and the criminals have drained your funds. One way to avoid this scam? Use your gift cards as soon as you receive them, giving bots less of a chance to discover your card information. You should also consider uploading your gift card onto the retailer's application as soon as possible after receiving the card. That gets the funds off the gift card and onto the retailer's site. Okay, scam number three, the shady cashier. Sometimes a store's cashier is in on the scam. Say you purchase a gift card at a department store. The cashier might activate the gift card, but instead of handing it back to you, switches the card with one that hasn't been activated. The cashier then keeps the activated card and gives you, you know, that card that doesn't work, and you go to use it and find out it doesn't work, but the cashier's already drained the funds out of the activated card. Now, what's the best way to avoid this scam? Watch the cashiers as they check you out. Make sure they hand the gift card back to you as soon as they activate the card. Okay, scam number four, stealing the numbers. Another popular gift card scam is when thieves go into a store and they're often armed with a magstripe reader that reads the numbers stored in the magnetic strip on gift cards. So they grab a handful of gift cards, you know, from the shelves at the Walmart or the Target. They scan it, they pull all that information, they put all the cards back. The scammer then next calls customer service numbers on the cards and provides that copied gift card number. And if this will tell the scammer if someone has purchased and activated the gift card and how much the balance is left on the card. The scammer then uses those gift cards to make online purchases, draining the balance of the card that you bought. Now, another trick the thieves use on stealing the numbers is to go into the stores and pull those gift cards off the shelf and then scratch off the film to get that, you know, gift card number or that PIN, and then they can cover it back up or they just leave it there. So hopefully, you know, you won't notice it when you buy it. But some of the more sophisticated thieves put an easy to obtain replacement sticker over that little scratched off number. The scammer then enters that card number and PIN into the same websites to check to see if the, you know, the retailer's website to see if it's been activated and loaded up with funds. And as soon as they notice that it's been activated and loaded, they spend their money online before you have a chance to spend it yourself. Now, how to avoid this scam? You need to inspect the gift cards before you buy them and look for signs that the packaging might have been compromised. Another thing is don't buy gift cards with exposed, you know, gift card numbers or the PIN, or if the gift card is being sold on a publicly displayed rack in retail stores. Those are the most often ones targeted. Now, scam number five, the online auction scam. You might be tempted to buy gift cards at online auction sites. They often advertise the cost of those much less than the gift card is worth. Don't buy those. Scammers often sell gift cards that haven't been activated at these sites. You pay for the cards thinking you're getting a bargain, because you're paying less than the card's face value, only to find that the gift card doesn't work. Other scammers lie about the value of the gift cards they are selling online. They might claim that the gift card is for $50, you pay for the card and receive it, and find out it's only worth $5 left on its, say, balance. Avoiding this scam is simple. Never buy gift cards from an online auction site. If you do want to buy a gift card online, buy them directly from the retailer offering them. Now, the sixth scam is the fake prize. You might get a call or email or text message from a scammer claiming that you've won a lottery or a contest. The scammer says you've won, you know, maybe a trip, a new car, a cash prize. But to claim the prize, you must first pay a redemption or claiming fee with a gift card. The scammer asks you to purchase a specific gift card, you know, call back and read those card numbers and that PIN over the phone to the scammers. This, of course, is another scam. No legitimate lottery, sweepstakes, or business will ask you to pay for a fee to claim your prize. And you'll never win a prize from a sweepstakes or lottery you didn't enter in the first place. Okay, scam number seven, the power company calls. Now, you're sure you've paid your utility bills on time each month, but one day, someone calls claiming to be a representative of your public utility, say, consumers energy in this area, and says that you're late on a bill and owe money. And if you don't pay up immediately, the utility will shut off your power or water. And they will say things like, the consumer's energy truck is on its way to shut off your power within 24 hours if a payment isn't made. The only way to pay is with a gift card that the utility company representative tells you to buy at the nearest convenience store. Again, this is a scam. The person calling isn't from the utility. It will simply use your gift card information for a shopping spree. Your public utility will never call you to say that you owe money and make demands. It will instead send you a letter. Your utility also won't threaten to shut off your power or water without first giving you plenty of warning and time to pay back what you owe. And utilities won't accept payment through a gift card. This is not a typical form of payment. Utility companies never ask you for your personal information over the phone. They will not contact you by phone and ask you for your account number or payment information. Sometimes con artists will attempt to trip you up by pretending to know your account number. Okay, scam number 8, the fake website. Let's say you're trying to reach Match.com, the dating site, to cancel your account. You search on Google for a customer service number to call. That leads you to a fake website built to look legitimate, but with a phone number that connects you to a scammer posing as Match's customer service. The rep says he can help first, though he told you he needs to install a program on your computer called TeamViewer, which allows him remote control of the computer. He then directs you to log into the bank, into your bank's website, and he's going to directly deposit your refund into your bank account. And let's say it's like a $90 refund, but this is a scam. Instead, he sets the scam in motion by manipulating the code on your computer, making it look like he deposited $900 in your bank account instead of the $90, a huge mistake. The only way to fix the mistake, the rep tells you, is to buy, you know, Target gift cards and give him the numbers. He could then put the money back into Match's bank accounts and all would be settled. Otherwise, he'd lose his job. And again, this is all a scam. He didn't deposit any money in your account. You bought the gift cards and handed them over, and you just got scammed again. Okay, scam number 9 is a friend in need. Let's say you receive a coworker email or a friend's Facebook message that you think is from a friend that says, good day, how are you doing? Hope this finds you well. I wonder if you could do a favor. Awaiting your response. The story continues that the friend is out of town or at a funeral or in a meeting, and they can't get a gift card for a birthday present for a friend in the hospital with cancer. So could you get it for them? You know, they may be asking you for money through Facebook or Venmo because their car was impounded and they need until next Friday's payday to pay you back. All of these are scams. A similar call may come from a fake state trooper policeman stating that you owe hundreds of dollars in speeding tickets and that the only way to remove them from your record is by calling in the numbers from an Amazon gift card to pay off your fines. Or how about an FBI agent calling with a warrant for your arrest? The only way to stop the police or FBI supposedly coming to your door to arrest you is with the help of another scammer who pretends to be a lawyer, conveniently a phone call away, who takes payment and gift cards. You know, maybe the phone call is from someone who says they work from Amazon, you know, claiming he knows someone hacked into your account and they need you to verify your identity or your IP address with a gift card, which they can't do. That's technically impossible with a gift card. Or maybe it's someone who works at Microsoft offering a refund for a computer security service you bought a few years ago that stopped working. The same holds true for an urgent call from a grandchild in distress. This is the classic hi grandma scam where they need money for, you know, bail or, you know, payment in form of a gift card. Or fraudsters posing as clergy members raising money in the form of gift cards for a worthy cause or person in need. These are all scams. Okay. So in summary, I've just told you the 9 kind of large gift card scams. Now, don't provide these gift cards over the phones when these scammers call you. Always verify these requests by calling the person asking or having the need. I know people are anxious to help, but wait until you know for sure that the need is real. Stop worrying about possibly hurting their feelings by not helping them out with this gift. Scammers know if they make it emotional and create this sense of urgency and fear, the logical part of your brain disconnects and the fight or flight kicks in. Be more savvy with a computer and always check sites, online sites like Snopes.com for the latest scams. Anytime a caller asks for gift cards, it's usually a scam. Always speak to the person to verify the request. And if they call you, be suspicious. Call them back with the phone number in your phone or on the company's website. That's a wrap of today's Safety Plan episode. If you have questions or have been a victim of a cyber scam, please tell me about it by emailing lccinfosec@lcc.edu. Or you can find more info at lccedu/connect. This episode of The Safety Plan was recorded by Paul Schwartz in the TLC Tower in downtown Lansing Community College and produced by Lane Ingram and engineered by Big D Dedalian. I'm Paul Schwartz, and this is LCC Connect. So long.
This has been a presentation of LCC Connect, a weekly program that features the voices, vibes, and vision of Lansing Community College. All shows featured on LCC Connect are recorded at the WLNZ studio, located on LCC's downtown campus. Each program is podcast-based and can be heard anytime at lccconnect.org. If you or someone you know would like to be a guest on one of our shows, connect with us by emailing lcc-connect@lcc.edu.